Israeli warplanes and artillery keep pounding the Gaza Strip, as the Palestinian death toll tops 210, almost half of them women and children. Fresh protests erupt in several countries across the world in solidarity with Palestinians and against the Israeli onslaught in the Gaza Strip. And at least 21 people die and about 100 others go missing after a monster cyclone slams into western India. Thanks for joining us. Israel pounds the Gaza Strip with fresh airstrikes and shelling from land and sea as the regime's deadly onslaught on the besieged Palestinian territory enters its second week. The latest attacks hit residential buildings near the main hospital in the Gaza Strip. Warplanes also hit a location near the Islamic University in western Gaza. Israeli media say that 65 targets in the cities of Gaza and Khan Yunis were hit within a half an hour. There's been no immediate reports of possible casualties from the latest attacks. The Israeli onslaught has already killed 212 Gazans since it began last Monday. The dead include 61 children and 36 women. The indiscriminate bombing has also destroyed 800 buildings in Gaza, damaging 10,000 more structures. Earlier, we were joined by our correspondent in Gaza, Ashraf Shannon, who gave us an update on the Israeli aggressions.
Less than five minutes ago, Israeli fighter jets, I believe F-35 fighter jets, fired at least 10 rockets not far from where we're standing right now. We are in front of the emergency room of Al-Shifa Hospital. This is the main hospital, the main health provider for the entire Gaza Strip. And over the past few days, several explosions happened here. Earlier in the morning, a building not far from here, about a couple hundred yards, was bombed and completely destroyed. And many buildings there were also sustained either complete or partial damage. The airstrikes continue, not only in Gaza. The ones that we hear, the bombings that we count is what we have in Gaza City. The Israeli fighter jets, the Israeli tanks are hitting almost every town in the Gaza Strip as we speak, including Khan Yunis, Bethlehem in the north, Beit Hanun in the north, Barij, Nazirat, Rafah. Every town and village in Gaza is under Israeli attack. Almost every minute, every hour, there is a bombing somewhere, there is a tank shelling somewhere. And if it's not tanks, they're using the navy to fire its shells towards the coast of the Gaza Strip. Since yesterday, maybe at least 100 shells were fired at the coastline. Even earlier tonight, about an hour and a half ago, I was counting maybe 50 shells hitting the coast not far from here. Shifa Hospital is adjacent to Al-Shati refugee camp. Shati is the...
That was a big explosion. Shati
is Shati is the Arabic word for beach, the beach refugee camp. It's not far from here, but 300 yards behind me is the Shati refugee camp. And even 2 days ago, when the Israeli regime bombed the building and committed a massacre...
Palestinian resistance groups have launched fresh attacks on Israel, retaliation for the regime's onslaught on the Gaza Strip. Hamas's military wing said it has targeted an Israeli military site east of Gaza with mortar shells. The Zedin al-Qassam brigades also fired missiles into the Israeli city of Netivot. Before that, the group fired rockets into Sderot and hit a gathering of Israeli soldiers near the city. Other Israeli cities, including Ashkelon and Beer Sheva, as well as a number of military bases, were targeted. In the past days, Palestinian rocket attacks also hit Tel Aviv. Resistance groups have promised more attacks if Israel does not stop its airstrikes on Gaza. So far, 10 Israelis have been killed and hundreds injured by Palestinian attacks. A senior medic in the Gaza Strip says the health system in the besieged Palestinian territory is struggling amid the deadly Israeli aggression and the coronavirus crisis.
The Ministry of Health is fighting on two fronts in the Gaza Strip, the coronavirus front and the other, which is more challenging, the injuries and the wounded in the Shifa Hospital and other hospitals in the Gaza Strip.
The remarks come as Shifa Hospital, the biggest health facility in Gaza, doubled the number of intensive care beds to cope with the rising number of wounded Palestinians. However, the coastal enclave is facing acute shortages of medicines and equipment, which medics blame on years of Israeli blockade. Local authorities have also warned that Gaza's only COVID-19 laboratory is no longer able to carry out testing due to an Israeli airstrike. The World Health Organization has already condemned the flare-up in Gaza, saying the protection of health workers and infrastructure is imperative in all circumstances.
Protection of health workers and health facilities is an imperative in all circumstances. It's essential that the norms of international humanitarian law be fully respected. In particular, health workers and infrastructure should always be protected, and I call for leaders on all sides to ensure respect for this vital.
The WHO chief made the remarks as Israeli warplanes and artillery continue to pound Gaza that has so far killed scores of Palestinians. Other than the rising death toll, the Israeli bombardment on civilian areas has displaced tens of thousands. Some 2,500 have now turned homeless. Over a week of Israeli attacks have also battered crucial infrastructure, with the electricity authority warning that it would run out of fuel in a couple of days. Palestinians in the occupied West Bank are set to stage a mass rally to condemn Israel's deadly aggression against the Gaza Strip. A general strike is also about to start across the West Bank and East Jerusalem al-Quds. The aim is to protest Israel's atrocities against Palestinians in the occupied territories and to show solidarity with the people of Gaza. On Monday, Palestinians in the West Bank held similar marches that turned violent after Israeli forces attacked protesters. Meanwhile, security remains tight in the occupied territories in the wake of two stabbing attacks that occurred Tuesday and the day before. Israeli forces shot two Palestinians involved in the incidents. Mona Kandil is a correspondent joining us from occupied Ramallah to tell us more. Mona, you did talk about the general strike that is going to happen today. I'm sure that's going to happen based on the news that we have. Tell us more about that, if you can, and where do we expect the protest to actually be rather big in the number of people that are going to participate, if you're able to tell us about that. And, of course, any other developments that you find important.
Yes, the general strike had been declared in historic Palestine and Jerusalem al-Quds. Historic Palestine, the lands that were occupied by Israel in 1948, like Nazareth, Haifa, Yaffa, Al-Lod, and numerous cities and villages in historic Palestine. The Palestinians there declared a general strike, saying that the Palestinians living there will not go to their works. We are speaking about doctors not going to their works in the Israeli hospitals. Shops would be completely closed. Universities are, students of the universities will not attend. Their vehicles will not be moving in between the areas. This will cost the Israeli regime high costs, according to the Palestinians there, when we are speaking that all over historic Palestine would be completely in a general strike. Palestinians would not be going to their businesses. They would be coasting the Israelis. Of course, this step had been taken to slam the Israeli military massacres being carried out against the Gaza Strip, as well as the ethnic cleansing of the Israeli regime all over the Palestinian territories. The ongoing settler attacks and oppression against the Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and in Jerusalem al-Quds, as well as against the Palestinians themselves living in historic Palestine, where many now call it Israel. Palestinians in the recent escalation that is still going on, they found that the Israeli regime, of course, had been supporting the settlers and giving them a green light to attack the Palestinians living there. Settlers had been attacking Palestinians' homes and properties, damaging and destroying the shops as well as their vehicles. Also in the occupied West Bank, a general strike had been declared since the early hours of today. All businesses had been closed, no schools, no universities. There would be a demonstration people would be gathered as we are speaking now. There are calls for Palestinians to gather in the center of Ramallah city, also in other areas of the occupied West Bank. Demonstrations would be taking place during the day, and there has been calls for the protesters, anyone who can reach the Israeli military checkpoints or these areas where clashes are usually taking place, to go there. This is the least that they can do to confront the Israeli occupation and to force it to stop its aggression on the Gaza Strip.
Okay, and finally, quickly, on the I'm afraid to say diplomatic front. I mean, are we having any movements towards having this issue be addressed either through the PA by Israel? We know that the U.S. Has pressured Israel, even though it's been limited in terms of the amount of pressure that's been exerted on Israel to stop their bombing campaign. Any news on that front?
Yesterday, the American Special Envoy, Hadi Amer, had been visiting the area. He held meetings with Israeli officials and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. But the Israeli media didn't issue the exact outcome of the meeting between Amer and the Israeli Prime Minister. But following their meeting, there was a statement from Israeli Prime Minister's office saying that Netanyahu would continue his bombardment of the Gaza Strip as long as the Palestinians there continue to fire rockets, and that he is protecting the Israelis. Yesterday morning, the U.S. envoy met Palestinian officials, and then he held a meeting with Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. The office of the Palestinian President issued a statement saying that Abbas has urged the American administration and Biden administration to exert efforts and to pressurize the Israeli regime to stop its aggression and massacres being carried out against the people of the Gaza Strip.
Thank you very much for that. We appreciate that. Mona Kandil there from Akhbar Ramallah. I'm sure we'll be in touch. Thank you so much. Well, fresh protests have taken place in several countries against the ongoing Israeli aggression against Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Indonesians in the capital, Jakarta, also expressed solidarity with Palestinians in Jerusalem outlets, where an Israeli crackdown has been ongoing in the past few weeks. Elsewhere in the world, Argentinian demonstrators marched on the Israeli embassy in Buenos Aires to protest the regime's strikes on the Gaza Strip. Cities across the globe, including Washington, D.C., London, and Istanbul, have witnessed rallies over the past week as Israel has ramped up its aggression against Palestinians. Pakistan's parliament has called on the UN to set up a tribunal to investigate the recent war crimes of Israel and Palestine. The call comes amid rising anti-Israel protests in Pakistan, demanding military action to stop Israeli aggression in the occupied territories. Javed Rana reports from Islamabad.
In a rare show of strength, the opposition parties and the government joined hands in Pakistan's parliament to pass a unanimous resolution over what it said unending war crimes against unarmed Palestinians by Israel. The parliament called on a 57-member bloc of Muslim countries, the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, or the OIC, to now undertake decisive steps to bring an end to ongoing unilateral war against innocent Palestinians. However, not very far from the parliament, the anti-Israeli protesters are not willing to trust OIC, given its track record of failures. The protests in Pakistan are expanding, given the relentless bombing by Israel, killing Palestinians since last week when Israel imposed unilateral war on Gaza after it attacked the third holiest site of Islam in the occupied eastern Jerusalem.
If their anger is not being expressed by the leadership of the Islamic world, I think they will go on their own. And I believe that an Arab Spring is about to restart. And this Arab Spring is not going to just remain to the Arab boundaries, but it will even come to Pakistan and beyond.
We want action against Israel!
These are Pakistani journalists. They are at pain over a growing scale of violence against international media networks and journalists in occupied Palestine by apartheid state of Israel. They protested and observed Black Day against Israel for killing innocent Palestinians and bombarding commercial infrastructure, housing international media networks, and Palestinian residents. International Federation of Journalists and Political Analysts point out that the frequency of the incidents with which journalists have been attacked with potentially a lethal force in the occupied Palestine indicates about the existence of a formal official policy to silence the media networks and journalists who are struggling hard to document the war crimes of Zionist state. However, so far, Israel has enjoyed impunity from all the war crimes it has committed against the unarmed Palestinian, given the fact it enjoys unconditional support from the US and other NATO allies in the Europe.
It only goes to show that the American moral power and European moral ascendancy also has limits. They are fast losing their moral authority to lecture the world on human rights.
More protests are planned on Friday when the clerics in hundreds of thousands of mosques and Islamic schools are expected to make anti-Israel speeches. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
Monster cyclone Tauktae has killed at least 20 people in India. The cyclone has battered large parts of the vast nation, sending huge waves crashing onto shores. It also turned streets into rivers and forced hundreds of thousands of people to flee. Savage winds swept through flimsy homes and uprooted trees, as well as electricity pylons. Authorities in Mumbai have closed the city's airport, urging people to stay indoors. Meanwhile, 96 people went missing after a vessel adrift off Mumbai's coast sank during the cyclone. That is the biggest to hit India in decades. The cyclone has interrupted the COVID-19 vaccine program there. And that does it for World News. It's bye-bye for now.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
In the limelight.
U.S. charities are funding Israeli regime settler organizations working to evict Palestinians from their East Al-Quds homes. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Alex Kane, writer. This article is published under the heading Tax-Exempt U.S. Nonprofits Fuel Israeli Regime Settler Push to Evict Palestinians. Stay tuned for more. On May 6, right-wing Israeli regime officials descended on Sheikh Jarrah, a neighborhood in occupied East Al-Quds, to show their support for the settler movement's push to displace Palestinian residents and take their homes. One of the officials was Arya King, a deputy mayor of Al-Quds and settler who lives in the Palestinian neighborhood of Ras al-Amud. In an exchange caught on camera, King mocked Palestinian activist Mohammed Abu Hummus for being shot by Israeli regime forces in his backside and then pointing at his head, said, "It's a pity it didn't go in here." The impending removal of Palestinian families from Sheikh Jarrah fueled tensions in Al-Quds, which spiraled out of the Holy City into Gaza and the rest of Palestine. The Zionist regime airstrikes are now blanketing Gaza. King is one of the players, among others, who has stoked tensions in Sheikh Jarrah, the site of a long simmering crisis. In 2007, King started the group Israel Land Fund. The Israel Land Fund isn't trying to dominate East Al-Quds by itself. It's doing it with the help of private American donors who get tax deductions for the money they give to U.S.-based nonprofits who funnel the money into Israeli settlements. The overwhelming majority of the Israel Land Fund's budget comes from the Central Fund of Israel, a U.S.-based nonprofit. The Central Fund of Israel is among a network of U.S.-based groups fueling dispossession and displacement of Palestinians from neighborhoods in Al-Quds to make way for Jewish settlers. The group's tax-exempt nonprofit status means their donors receive an effective U.S. government subsidy to bolster the settlement movement. From 2009 to 2013, U.S. charities funneled over $220 million to Israeli settler organizations. According to a 2015 Haaretz investigation, U.S. nonprofit central involvement in the Israeli settler movement has sparked calls among Palestinian rights advocates for the U.S. government to investigate the U.S.-based organizations fueling Palestinian displacement. Reached by phone, on the number listed on the Central Fund of Israel's website, a man who refused to give his name declined to comment on the group's activities, saying, "My history with journalists has been so horrible, I'm not interested." An Israel Land Fund spokesperson said, "ILF is not involved in any illegal act." The spokesperson told The Intercept that the group is not involved so much in Sheikh Jarrah. The Israel Land Fund assisted in the eviction of a Palestinian family in Sheikh Jarrah in 2017, and King openly advertises that one of his major targets is a neighborhood. "In about 10 years, we will have in Sheikh Jarrah some 400, maybe 500 Jewish families," King told the Jerusalem Post in 2017. The Israel Land Fund advertises residential plots in what the group calls Nahalot Shimon, the Hebrew name given to parts of Sheikh Jarrah. Two other Al-Quds neighborhoods, Batan al-Hawa and al-Bustan, are also facing a wave of eviction orders instigated by U.S. nonprofit-backed settler groups. The Sheikh Jarrah and al-Bustan eviction plans, which threaten the homes of some 2,000 Palestinians, were condemned as violations of international law by 25 House Democrats in a letter sent to Secretary of State Antony Blinken recently, calling on the State Department to pressure the Zionist regime over the pending forced displacement. The organization behind the targeting of 8 Palestinian families in Sheikh Jarrah is a U.S.-registered real estate firm by the name of Nahalot Shimon. Though the Israel Land Fund is not linked to the current round of evictions, King is loudly advocating for it because it will help his dream of turning Sheikh Jarrah into a Palestinian-free, Jewish-only settlement. In 2017, King's organization helped evict 8 members of the Shemansne family from their home in Sheikh Jarrah. The Israel Land Fund contacted the era what the courts said were the original Jewish owners and represented her in legal proceedings to kick the family out. The Central Fund of Israel, the main funder of King's Group, is a New York registered nonprofit run by Jay Marcus, the owner of a textile company that takes in millions of dollars every year from donors who get to write off the checks as tax deductions. Since 2011, the CFI has given the Israel Land Fund over $720,000 for its settlement activities, according to documents filed to Israeli regulators and reviewed by The Intercept. In 2017, the Central Fund of Israel's donation constituted 99.2% of the Israel Land Fund's total budget. Such arrangements between U.S. nonprofit groups and Israeli settler organizations are not uncommon. 2 miles to the south of Sheikh Jarrah lie the Silwa neighborhoods of Batan al-Halwa and al-Bustan, which are both in the crosshairs of Israeli settlers. In November 2020, an Israeli court ruled in favor of Israeli settler group Ataret Kohanim's request to displace 87 Palestinians from their homes in Batan al-Halwa. Ataret Kohanim is backed by the U.S.-based American Friends of Ataret Kohanim, which delivers tax-deductible donations to the settler group. According to the site Charity Navigator, which tracks such groups, in September 2020, the Internal Revenue Service automatically revoked the American Friends tax-exempt status because the group failed to file documents with the U.S. government. In 2017, the last year records are available. The group gave its settler counterparts over $525,000. And in Al-Bustan, 88 Palestinian homes are facing demolition orders to make way for archaeological attractions meant to showcase the ancient Jewish link to the area. The group instigating the demolitions is Elad, an Israeli settler group, which in turn is funded in part by Friends of Er David, a U.S.-based nonprofit. Friends of Er David gave $36 million to the Israeli group between 2006 to 2013, according to Haaretz. They depend on their donors' money, said Hagit Ofran, the director of Israeli group Peace Now Settlement Watch. Without the donors, there is no settlement in East Al-Quds. The leading role U.S. charities play in displacement of Palestinians has prompted Palestinian rights advocates to call for increased scrutiny of the nonprofits.
The debate.
Israel continues to pound the Gaza Strip and Palestinians continue to die. The UN session failed in achieving a final statement due to U.S.'s pro-Israel stance. The U.S. has said that Israel reserves the right to defend itself. While news has come out that the U.S. has approved the sale of $735 million of precision-guided missiles. In this edition of the debate, we will look at how the world is condemning Israel's war on Gaza, while zooming in on the U.S. complicity in supporting Israel's aggression against Palestinians. First, Ashraf Shannon, our correspondent, joins us from Gaza City to give us the latest. Ashraf, what do you have for us?
Israeli fighter jets and tanks continue to pound the Gaza Strip since last Monday. The latest figures just released by the Palestinian Ministry of Health 212 people have lost their lives in Gaza, among them dozens of children and women and elderly people, and even doctors, while 1,400 Palestinians in Gaza have been injured with various injuries, varying from serious to critical condition. This as the enclave lacks many medical supplies for the hospitals. And today, the Ministry of Health just minutes ago made an urgent appeal for shipments of medicines, ambulances, and every possible thing to help the patients in Gaza and the wounded. Tonight, Israeli fighter jets attacked a building across the street from the Ministry of Health headquarters in Gaza, damaging not only the building that was hit and killing people there, but also injuring medical teams across the street in the ministry. And the ministry says that even tests for COVID-19 will stop for now because of the damage that that happened to the laboratories there.
Thank you very much for that, Prince Ashraf Shana from Gaza City. Obviously, he needs to stay safe. Journalists there are also not safe, as reports have come out. Let me introduce our guest for this edition of the debate. Human rights advocate and political activist Rania Masri joins us from Raleigh, North Carolina. We also have a U.S. coordinator, Sami Doun, Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network. I'm sorry, Joe Catron from the Sami Doun Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network joining us from New York. Okay, welcome. Rania Masri, let me first start with you, if I may. Speaking to one analyst, he says that this time around things are different, that we are seeing the beginning of the unraveling of Israel, and he cited lots of reasons, but he says that this time around is different. Do you see this being different this time around?
There are certain things this time around that are different, yes, and the main difference is that we see a unity amongst all Palestinians. Palestinians in Gaza, Palestinians in Jerusalem, Palestinians in the occupied West Bank, and of course Palestinians in 1948 Palestine. They are all united. All of them are protesting. This is what is catching the Israeli apartheid state off guard, is that they are having resistance and protests from within Lid and Ramli and Nasra and Tarshish and other areas within 1948 Palestine. The Israeli ethno-supremacist state had thought that they could divide Palestinians through checkpoints, through guns, through walls, but what is very clear is that the Palestinian cry for liberation cannot be divided by Zionism, that they are united in the face of Zionism. This is what is new. Unfortunately, what is not new is the Israeli brutality and the magnificence of that brutality. Every single time we say it is unprecedented what the Israeli brutality has been doing, and now we say it again, that it is unprecedented now in 2021, that they are bombing these buildings and they have bombed orphanages and they are bombing the roadways through hospitals, and that they continue to have the unconditional support of the U.S. administration that continues to say, Biden saying that the Israeli attacks are, quote, not an overreaction. Unfortunately, the U.S. position is not new.
Well, the U.S. position, based on what we have, the latest is coming from the U.S. Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken. For the one hand, Israel has the right to defend itself, blaming Hamas for the crisis, and he said that he is sorry for the loss of lives. And this came on top of news that the U.S. has actually approved sales of precision-guided missiles to the tune of $735 million. Joe Catron, when you take a look at that, how do you assess the U.S. position?
Well, I think the U.S. position is clear. It has been an uncritical supporter of Israel and its crimes without cause since, at the very earliest, 1967. This is something that's constant among administrations, regardless of their party. It's an absolute point of consensus among our ruling class and the political class that represents them. At the same time, we see noticeable shifts on the ground. Sami Doun is maintaining a list of international actions in solidarity with Palestine. So I can tell you that the outpouring of support both across the world and particularly within the United States has been overwhelming this time. It's something that's really unprecedented. And I'm hopeful that if we do the right kind of organizing and mobilization here we'll be able to achieve something politically that we'll be able to seriously confront U.S. imperialism support for its Zionist settler colonial proxy. But of course, that depends a great deal on us and how well we approach the tasks at hand.
Well, curious, not to just keep talking about the U.S. position here, but I'm wondering, Rani Amasri, why are we looking at, for example, the U.S. blocking for the third time in a week the adoption of a joint U.N. Security Council statement which calls for a halt to Israeli-Palestinian violence and the protection of civilians? And you have countries like China, Tunisia, and Norway to have done that. Can they take that a step further? One person saying, why don't they just sanction Israel?
Well,
I believe that
this will be for Rania Masri. I'm sorry, Jokotron. Go ahead, Rania Masri.
Most definitely, countries that oppose U.S. imperialism can definitely take it a step further. There is nothing that prohibits Norway and Indonesia and China and all the other countries to sanction Israel. There is nothing that prohibits them from expelling the Israeli ambassador in their countries and bringing their own ambassador back from occupied Palestine. There is nothing that stands in their way. But I do want to make one thing very clear. I mean, the U.S. government and other media pundits have continued to say Israel has the right to defend itself. Israel does not have the legal right to defend itself because Israel is an occupation. It does not have that legal right. And yes, we must be very clear. Israel also does not have a right to exist. States do not have rights to exist. Apartheid does not have a right to exist. Palestinians are the ones that have the right to defend themselves. Palestinians are a people who do have the right to exist. And so this is what we need to be framing the media as. And yes, to repeat it, yes, of course, governments around the world can do a lot more than simply appealing to the UN Security Council to issue a resolution. They can do a lot more. Governments in the Arab world, if they care one bit about their own sense of dignity, can not only expel the Israeli ambassadors, and we still have an Israeli ambassador in Jordan and Egypt and elsewhere, but would it be too much to ask for the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia and Bahrain and the others to stop their military agreements with Israel, to stop their kind of economic agreements with Israel? This is what is needed around the world. Sanctions on this ethno-supremacist, racist, settler state. This is what is needed.
Well, you mentioned the UAE. Jokotron, the UAE has come out saying it supports U.S. efforts and the efforts of its envoy to the Middle East, Hadi Amr, in order to work to calm the situation, as they say, to reduce the tensions or stop the acts of violence. Is that the best an Arab brother can do for Palestinians?
I'm sorry, who are you asking?
You, Jokotron.
Well, in one sense, we look at these states, these countries in the Gulf, the UAE and Saudi Arabia, and we see their relationship to Western imperialism, primarily U.S. imperialism, is not remarkably different from that of the Zionist so-called State of Israel. I don't even like to call it that. But Donald Trump, our recent president, said, and I think he was correct in this, that without U.S. support, Saudi Arabia, for example, would collapse within a number of weeks. These specific entities, the Gulf countries, have been locked in a quiet alliance with Israel, not only since the beginning of the normalization project, which Trump oversaw, but for decades. And this is a direct result of their ties to Western imperialism and to the economy that it serves in North America, Western Europe, and to a limited extent elsewhere. In terms of other countries, China, Russia, yes, of course, they could and should be doing a great more, but that will depend a great deal upon the pressures they face. And as a U.S. activist, I'm obligated to say how much we're able to challenge U.S. policies and U.S. imperialism from the inside. We can't simply put it on the rest of the world and hope that they'll have the willingness to isolate the United States, which is what is necessary, as well as the State of Israel, because the two are absolutely linked. There's no confronting one without directly challenging the other. A great deal of it is upon the shoulders of those of us here in North America and Western Europe who are, as Che Guevara said, in the belly of the beast. This is a key site in the struggle, and I don't want to say anything that would detract from that and from the necessity of escalated struggle here, which I'm very hopeful we will see in the coming days and weeks.
Rania Masri, Arab countries have to come on board. And I mentioned the UAE, who came out saying it supports U.S. efforts and its efforts of its envoy in the Middle East, Hadi Ahmed. What are your thoughts on that, and why aren't they coming on board? Do you think this time around there's a possibility for that to happen?
I think it is no coincidence that the countries that are closest to the Zionist state in the region are also the most anti-democratic. If the United Arab Emirates actually were a democratic state and were appealing to the calls from its own citizenry, then in no way, shape, or form would they have had these military economic agreements with the Zionist state of Israel. The same applies to Saudi Arabia, the same applies to Bahrain. The same also applies to Jordan, where we've had massive protests in Jordan calling for the expulsion of the Israeli ambassador, calling for the cancellation of the Israeli-Jordanian gas deal. So we have a very strong relationship that we are seeing between democracy and between Palestinian rights and Palestinian liberation. The countries that most appeal to their people's sense of democracy are the ones that are standing closest to Palestine. Those, even the United States that claims to be a democratic state, we know from a report more than 15 years ago that the United States really does not function like a democracy, and so it comes as no surprise that the United States continues to cow down to the military-industrial complex and continues to support a state that has been built in a manner very similar to how the United States has been built. But I want to take advantage of this time to clarify a few things, if you will allow me.
Sure.
All of Israel, every Israeli city, every Israeli village was built in the same way that the Sheikh Jarrah right now is being destroyed. In the same way, every Israeli village, every Israeli city has been built on a destroyed Palestinian village and a destroyed Palestinian city. A few days ago, we marked 73 years of the Nakba, and we need to understand that the Nakba on the Palestinians is ongoing. It is ongoing every single day. Therefore, our cry needs to be very simple. We are not simply asking for an end to the occupation from 1967 borders. We're not simply asking for liberation of Jerusalem. We're not simply asking for the end of the siege, the criminal siege on Gaza. We are asking for full democracy throughout the historic lands of Palestine, for a full right of return of all Palestinian refugees throughout the land of Palestine. We are asking for the end of Zionism, the end of this ethno-supremacist regime in the historic land of Palestine. They have one choice and one choice only. Either they will continue to maintain this level of apartheid, which will continue to wreak violence and havoc and destruction on mostly Palestinians, or they will build a civil democratic state. That is the choice that we have. We also need to be very careful for the cries that are coming out from U.S. leadership and others asking for, quote, sustained calm. We need to understand what sustained calm means. Sustained calm means that Palestinians get to die silently. Palestinians cannot die silently. They have the right to resist, and we need to be standing with them shoulder to shoulder in protecting their right of resistance and in building the path forward towards a real democratic solution throughout the historic land of Palestine and an end to all forms of Zionism and all forms of apartheid throughout the historic lands of Palestine. This is our role, and we can no longer be spectators to the criminality and the lack of accountability that the Zionist state has been enforcing against Palestinians and against many others throughout the region.
So, Katrina, if you don't mind, I'd like to have your recount of your time in the Gaza Strip when you were there. Of course, since the time you were there, up until now, lots of major things have happened. Obviously, under the siege, the situations have gotten worse. You've had COVID hit, and now you have this. And when I searched through all the different news sources as to the coverage of what's going on in the Gaza Strip, I have not found one piece of news that indicates any humanitarian effort to be exerted to the people of Palestine. Not one. It does talk about a couple of them about how the hospitals are under strain. But not one country saying we need to get some help for the injured, for the hospitals to deal with the injured. Tell us what we may be seeing there in Gaza as to what's occurred.
Certainly. Well, I was there from March 2011 through October 2014, so for the last two Israeli offensives in 2012 and 2014. And during the offensive of 2014, the 51-day offensive, I spent a number of time along with other international activists in Gaza hospitals trying to dissuade Israel from bombing them with very mixed results. We succeeded in some cases. Well, arguably, we were perhaps a factor, and in others, we did not. But yes, it was a complete onslaught, not only against the population of Gaza, but upon all the infrastructure, like hospitals, which they need to survive. And this is something that we've only seen escalated this time. They've expanded their bank of targets to include not only hospitals, but banks, making it impossible for Palestinians to participate in the economy. They're trying to completely isolate the Palestinian population and make it reliant on their whims, so that Palestinians will need to go to Israel for anything that they need. They don't want Palestinian reliance or self-sufficiency, and in many cases, certainly in the Gaza Strip, they don't want the existence of any viable Palestinian institutions. And this is something that we've seen play out, although in an escalating way, in every Israeli offensive on the Gaza Strip from 2008-2009 onward. Their tactics change, their target banks change, but the overall strategy remains the same.
Rani Masri, since we're quickly running out of time, a number of factors have to come into play, and they have. And maybe they have to gain in intensity in order for us to see a real change here, I'm guessing. You mentioned some of the conflicts that are happening within the occupied territories between in certain towns. You're also looking at, of course, the rocket fire in retaliation to Israeli bombardment of the Gaza Strip. And there's momentum in terms of people power around the world. What else needs to come into play here in order for there to perhaps be a motion, a real serious move towards getting the situation resolved, at least have a starting point here?
Well, just as a clarification, there are no conflicts in the occupied territories. There is an uprising throughout the land of Palestine. What we need to do here, what would be great to see within historic Palestine is the dismantling of the Oslo Accords completely, and the dismantling of the Palestinian Authority, and the resurgence of a real representative Palestinian leadership that represents all Palestinians throughout the historic land of Palestine, and including the Palestinian diaspora of the Palestinian refugees. This is what is critically needed to strengthen the resistance and to push our pathway forward towards liberation. What is needed from everybody else, from all the progressives around the world, is again not to be spectators to this violence. That means we need to be organizing wherever we are, in whatever capacity we have, to be supporting the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement wherever we are, to make very clear that we clarify the narrative. This is not a conflict. This is not a civil war. We are not asking for a ceasefire. We are not asking for calm. We are asking for liberation from apartheid and from occupation. We are asking for Palestinians to defend themselves and to live as equals in their own land. We need to clarify this narrative very, very strongly wherever we are. We need to be building solidarity across communities for real democracy wherever we are. And again, we need to be supporting the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement wherever we are. For those individuals that are within the Arab region, the cry for liberation, for democracy in the Arab region cannot be separated from the cry for liberation in the occupied lands of Palestine. They are very intrinsic and they are tied together. Ultimately, once we are able to develop regimes of equality, real equality, once we are able to destroy all kinds of ethno-supremacy that we see really captivated and emboldened within Zionism, then we could be working a step forward. But I want to assert again and again, if you are outraged at what is happening against Palestinians, and how can you be but outraged, then I urge you to speak up, to write, to organize, to contact your governmental representative, to plan the boycott, and to hold on to the anger that you feel today, and to remember when the bombing ends that there will likely still be a siege on Gaza, and we will still need to be organizing and protesting to lift that siege on Gaza.
Final question, under a minute, Joe Catrone, Gaza is getting bombed again. The Israeli bombing has started again. Do you see this ending anytime soon?
Well, I would start by clarifying one thing. The current rocket fire from Gaza wasn't provoked by Israeli attacks on Gaza, but by the Israeli attacks on Al-Aqsa. And that, I think, is a key impetus for the sense of unity that Rania spoke about before, among Palestinians across geographic sectors, all of occupied Palestine, as well as the refugee camps in Jordan, Lebanon, and Syria, And also the unity among various sectors of Palestinian resistance, the popular struggle, the armed struggle, boycott activism. And that's something that's fairly unprecedented. In the past, we've seen intifadas. In the past, we've seen this level of armed struggle. But I don't believe we've seen everything come together in exactly this way. Uh-huh. And that's something that's very powerful. And in addition to the boycott, I think we need to be very clear on our support for Palestinian struggle at all of these levels. The boycott, the popular struggle, and the armed struggle.
Okay, thank you very much for that. Ashraf Shannon at the top of the hour spoke to us, a correspondent from Gaza City. And thank you, human rights advocate and political activist Rania Masri. And the U.S. coordinator, Sami Doun, Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network, Joe Katron. Thank you. That does it for this edition of The Debate. From Mikhail Batakhli, entire team in the capital, Tehran. It's goodbye.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام می‌گذاره، همه این ارزش‌ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم امر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali عليه الصلاة والسلام, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program's To My Brother, and I'm your host, Mehdi. We're talking about the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Please stay with us. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time.
In the name of Allah, Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. Welcome to this segment of To My Brother. My name is Muhammad. After returning from the Battle of Siffin, Imam Ali gave certain pieces of advice to one of his sons. Historians consider him to be Imam Hassan alayhi salam, while others are of the opinion that he was Muhammadul Hanafi. He wrote this letter in the form of a will. They deal with almost every aspect of life, which goes a long way to make a man successful in life, brave, humane, generous, virtuous, and pious. Today, I'm going to read to you an excerpt from the last will of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Please stay with us. My dear son, you must not allow uncertainties and doubt poison your mind. Skepticism or irrational likes and dislikes should not affect your views. But remember that before you start thinking and deliberating over a problem, seek guidance of the Lord and beseech Him to give you a lead in the right direction. Avoid confusion in your ideas, and do not let disbelief take hold of your mind, because the first will lead you to agnosticism and the others towards errors and sins. When you are thus prepared to solve any problem, and you are sure that you possess a clear mind, a sincere and firm desire to reach the truth, to say the correct thing, and to do the correct deed, then carefully go through the advice that I am leaving for you. If your mind is not clear, and it is not as free from doubts as you wish it to be, then you'll be wandering in the wilderness of uncertainties and